We remember today Mike Monk, who died in July and was the author of The Portland Red Guide, Sites and Stories of Our Radical Past. According to an article that appeared in the Oregonian in July, Mike was a child refugee of the Nazi occupation of Czechoslovakia, who arrived in Portland with his family in 1939. His father, Frank Monk, would go on to become a professor at Reed College and was instrumental in the high-profile targeting and removal of Professor Stanley Moore from the Reed faculty in the 1950s in the midst of the Red Scare and HUAC hearings. Mike Monk, however, broke ideological ranks with his father and wrote extensively about Moore's firing as an egregious violation of academic freedom. Mike Monk would go on to become a professor of political science, who on his retirement from Rutgers University would return to Portland and immerse himself in studying the city's radical past. We bring you audio from a talk that Mike Monk gave at Rose Villa Retirement Community about his book, The Portland Red Guide, which was published in 2007 by PSU's Ooligan Press.
When I returned to Portland, one of the first things that I noticed was it presents itself as a city to people who live here and people who visit in the names of its streets, its buildings, and its monuments. And I immediately noticed that they were named for the winners in the economic competition that our economic system requires. They were the people who exploited natural resources, who took the land from the Native Americans who lived here before, the people who exploited workers in the factories. And missing was the other side of that competition. Those who lost, but those who believed or committed themselves to a better world rather than their personal position in it. In other words, they opposed those who the city now honors as its pioneers, as its entrepreneurs, and those who are considered success in the mainstream narrative. So I decided to dedicate my time to presenting that other side, those who struggled on behalf of the exploited, on behalf of people removed from their lands, and so on. My efforts resulted in a guidebook, and I chose it deliberately, that format, in order to, I hope, produce the same kind of curiosity from the physical space that people are witnessing, the same kind of response that patriotic sites like Mount Rushmore are intended to inspire in the people. So the guidebook is actually a series of physical locations that are associated with the people, the organizations, and the events that mark important parts of Portland's radical history. In Oregon City on Main Street, before about 1,000 spectators, Sheriff Joseph Meek hanged 5 Cayuse Indian resistors, the leaders of a resistance against the settlers' takeover. In Oregon City, we had a class warfare when the paper workers at the West Lynn paper mill fought against strikebreakers in 1907 on Main Street again in Oregon City. We also historically have a link to utopian communities, which I guess the current term is intentional communities. They were founded by people who were uncomfortable with industrialization and urbanization. The nearest one to Rose Villa is about 20 miles south at Aurora. If you've ever been to the Oregon coast and are familiar with the towns there, it may be that you haven't known that a post office on the Oregon coast between 1904 and 1907 was called Karl Marx. And that town now is today's Neskowin. Nearby Rose Villa, in our neighborhoods of Selwood and Oregon City, we also look at the Oregon Yacht Club, which is just off of Oaks Park. The Yacht Club was the first home of one of the partners in that notorious duo of John Reed and Louise Bryant, who reported on the Russian Revolution and were featured in the movie Reds, where John Reed was played by Warren Beatty and Louise Bryant by Diane Keaton. So in 1909, Louise Bryant lived on a houseboat in what is still today the Oregon Yacht Club. And until she left Portland in 1915 for New York and her partnership with John Reed, her studio was in a building directly across from the public library that still exists at 1033 Southwest Yamhill. Also in Selwood was the farm from which the anarchist newspaper, The Firebrand, was published between 1895 and 1897 until it was suppressed on the charges of obscenity by the U.S. Post Office. There was also a strike at the Oregon City Woolen Mills in 1907 that's the subject of a much more recent play that was put on by the Northwest Labor College in the 1970s. Finally, in our neighborhood on McLaughlin Boulevard in Milwaukee, Dr. Ruth Barnett, a abortion provider, was finally stopped from continuing her career when the Clackamas County courts found her guilty of manslaughter and sentenced her to the penitentiary. Now, all told, there are 194 sites of Portland radical history in the book. And obviously, we can't describe even a small part of them. So I'll try to focus on areas, neighborhoods of the city with the largest concentration. And the one that arises first is Skid Row, which is West Burnside Street. It's an area that attracted seasonal workers in the off-season from the lumber, from mining, from fishing industries. When they were off work for seasonal reasons, they needed entertainment, they needed a place to stay, so a large number of bars and hotels developed in the area, and of course, radicals followed them. So the headquarters of the IWW was at 2nd and Burnside for many, many years, and it was also the site that one of its members, Joe Hill, first sang what became famous as the Pie in the Sky song. That was in 1910. Across the street from the Wobbly headquarters was Tom Burns' Clock Shop, which had a radical library in the basement, and many Portland radicals developed their ideology and worldview by visiting that library. That the intersection of 2nd and 3rd and Burnside were also the sites of the 1932 Bonus March, beginning in Portland and ending up in Washington, D.C., and also a frequent site of strikers in the 1934 Longshore Strike, which is probably the most prominent labor history event in the city. And also in the Burnside area, in 1942, Minoru Yasui was arrested for defying the curfew on Japanese Americans and sent to prison. Another major site of places listed in the Red Guide were the park blocks, the plaza blocks, as they were called then, in front of the City Hall and County Courthouse, and of course today the site of the notorious demonstrations against police racism and the president's special troops in front of what is the U.S. courthouse now. Anyway, those park blocks were the favorite site of Wobbly and Socialist Party and later on the Communist Party for mass rallies and assemblies and protests, marches intended to demonstrate that there was an alternative to the way things were. Specifically, in 1934, the radicals raised a red flag over City Hall, which attracted a great deal of public attention. I thought also it might be appropriate to focus on a few areas and events and organizations that lit the early struggles against racism, against fascism, and for the working class. And those actions were very often led by the local Communist Party. In the early 1930s, the Communists organized a movement to save the life of a black man, Ted Jordan, who was convicted of murder in a prejudice trial. They were also active in the protests against other police shootings of black people in Giles Lake and Vanport in 1945. The West Side Club of the Communist Party held demonstrations to persuade Safeway in Northwest Portland to hire black workers in 1948. And the Albina Club of the Communist Party, which was composed primarily of black people, endorsed the Progressive Party's campaign for president in 1948 under Henry Wallace. And one of its members, Eustace Curry, was the first black candidate to actually win a Democratic ballot place in the primary for state legislature for Multnomah County. Communists were also the leaders of what small protests occurred when the Nazi battleship Bremen came to Portland in 1937. It was welcomed by Portland city municipal and business leaders, while at the same time the communists even launched small boats with protest signs. Many were arrested for their premature anti-fascism. And finally, there were 11 Oregonians who went to Spain to fight in the Spanish Civil War against Franco's fascists on behalf of the Spanish Republic. And one of them, William Miller, was killed in one of the last battles of the Lincoln Brigade. He came from a farm near Dayton and joined the Communist Party in Portland. Communists and old Wobblies, much sometimes the same person, by the way, were active in the Longshore Union during the great 1934 strike. And the union that emerged from it, the ILWU, commemorates Bloody Wednesday at Terminal 4, probably the bloodiest event in Portland labor history, when Portland police shot and wounded four strikers while trying to break the picket lines at Terminal 4 in St. John's. The leader of the ILWU in subsequent years, Francis Murnane, was the only Portland or Oregon labor leader officially honored with a public monument. And this happened after his death in 1968, and a rather elaborate monument was built just south of the Burnside Bridge on the Portland waterfront. It is, I think, of very significant that only monument to a labor leader was torn down and demolished in 2007 to make way for the commercial Saturday market. This was an act that many of us described as municipal vandalism. And also, radicals were prominent in the organization of the International Woodworkers Union, the CIO, the only union that had its headquarters in Portland. And that union, in 1949, was expelled from the CIO on charges of being communist-dominated. So looking back on this very brief outline of the Red Guide, I want to emphasize that there are, as I keep saying, 194 separate places that are described very briefly in the book, but you are also offered walking tours and maps.
We've been remembering the late Mike Monk today. He was the author of the Portland Red Guide, Sites and Stories of Our Radical Past, and that was audio from a talk he gave at the Rose Villa Retirement Community. This is Desiree Helgers for the Old Mill Radio.